everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Read Right to Left. We have returned! Second season? I don't know.
Second season?
We're back. Ray has, from what I understand, settled in the US, so we are now on opposite sides of the world. But, fear not, wonderful listeners, because we will continue.
We are still united through our love of manga.
Exactly. And honestly, it's not that difficult of a time difference, so we've made it work. But this month, yes. August, we are doing a very special creator spotlight, notably for my good friend and co-host, Ray, here. We're doing Motohagio, and yep. We will be answering all of your questions. You guys sent us so many. Thank you very, very much. And I'm sure 90% is just us, and by us, I do mean Ray, gushing joyously about this wonderful mangaka, and hopefully answering some of the stuff you guys have sent through.
Hopefully all of our readers are aware, but for those who might not be, Motohagio is a lot. She's done so much. She really can be placed right up there on a list with, like, Osamu Tezuka and Shotaro Ishinomori as one of the most, like, influential, like, juggernauts of manga. Certainly, I think whether she's, like, to your taste or not, she's someone that you should at least, like, give a book or two at some point in your manga reading, you know, hobby, if you are at all interested in, like, the development of manga as a medium, or the history of manga, particularly shoujo manga, although you can see her influence basically everywhere.
Absolutely.
So she began being active in the 1970s. We have basically in the 1960s and before. There were shoujo manga, but most of it was written by men. And had very, very simplistic stories, often about, like, girls trying to reunite with their long-lost mother. Romance was extremely taboo, even heterosexual romance, which is almost unthinkable now. I feel like a lot of people have a misconception of shoujo being synonymous with romance, but at the time it was not considered proper for young ladies to be reading about kissing and stuff.
Perish the thought, Ray.
Yeah. So in the 60s, there were a handful of female creators like Maki Miyako and Hideko Mizuno, who did push very hard to sort of make romance more of a thing in shoujo manga. And we see those creators then becoming an influence on the next generation of creators who were growing up in the 60s. But, you know, once they hit, like, their late teens, early 20s, we see them starting to break into the manga creation. Themselves, because we're seeing sort of the first generation of, like, rookie awards with magazines, with a bunch of, like, manga magazines and manga publishers really targeting very young creators, young artists, who had grown up on manga themselves. And with this, we see an absolute flood of young female shoujo manga creators, and just a complete revolution, just a total overturn of shoujo manga as a whole, on basically every sphere. We do still have these very, like, younger, like, magazines that are still, you know, focused on very cutesy, innocent stories, But we also see grand historical epics like the Rose of Versailles. And we also see the group that Moto Hagio was a part of, along with like Keiko Takemiya, Yumiko Oshima. There's a lot of others involved. Yasuko Aoike, Toshie Kihara. But these are artists who are more interested in sort of bringing a more literary element to shoujo manga. They're very well read. Certainly Hagio, for her part, is ridiculously well read, constantly reading, and all of her influences show up in her work very heavily. And we do call that group, often including as well some of the more popular creators like Ryoko Ikeda, who does the Rose of Versailles. All of that together, we call them the Year 24 group. I could go into like the controversy around that name and like the history of it, but I'm not going to, because it's a lot of really stupid petty drama, to be honest. But if you want the rundown of why Moto Hagio and Keiko Takemiya cannot be in the same state at the same time when they're in America, hit me up, because it's kind of wild.
Oh, yeah. If you want drama, if you think drama is a new invention of social media, absolutely not.
Yep, no, Hagio just came out with a whole book that's just like, this is why I hate Keiko Takemiya. But anyway, that's Hagio. That's the whole, like, 70s shoujo manga revolution. You know, we see from there basically everything we know shoujo manga to be coming out of these various movements. And really, the ripples are still spreading to this day. Of course, we've already talked about artists like Yuki Kamatani, who are hugely influenced by Hagio and by the Year 24 group. Yeah, it cannot be understated how influential she is. But yeah, that's Moto Hagio in a nutshell. Not really a nutshell. I went on for a while, but you know.
It's fine. I think it gives a good context to a lot of the stuff we're going to be talking about. I think a lot of her history is really reflected in her titles, her personal background, her personal, I don't want to say issues, but the things she grapples with in her personal life come up pretty front and center in a lot of her works. So, you know, it's good, I think, to start with that context and kind of lay it out there, because obviously for a lot of creators, their art does, to a certain extent, reflect themselves, and Hagio is no different.
Yeah, she's got a very, very, what can I say, a unique way of seeing the world that is very much reflected in her work. And I think of her as a creator who, like, more so than, like, hitting with a huge variety of people, it's like a whole lot of people are going to read her work and bounce right off it. Like, wow, that was really pretty, but what? Or, I don't know about this, you know, that was kind of weird, is what she seems to get a lot. But then you have, like, sort of this minority of people who read her work and it just hits harder than anything has ever hit before. She's one of those authors, if that makes sense.
She can crystallize a thought or a feeling or, well, emotion, and just have it perfectly capture in that empathetic way how you're feeling in that moment.
Yeah. Yep. She really gets into the nitty-gritty mess of what it is to be human. And that's where she makes her most poignant work. And, yeah, she doesn't like absolutes, I don't think. Not at all. You're never gonna walk away from one of her works feeling like you know exactly who the good guy and the bad guy is, and what's right and what's wrong. You know, who should have ended up with who?
So I think on that, or continuing on, we have so many wonderful questions, and I think it's first and foremost we should start from a couple questions from 365 Days of 801, who asked, how did you get into or interested in Hagio's work? Did you want to... I know you have, like, a long storied history with Hagio, right?
Yeah. it's pretty simple how I got into her, though. I think back in the day, I used to, like, religiously read, like, ANN. And the Manga Bookshelf Crew as well.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of buzz around The Heart of Thomas, I think it was. I didn't read A Drunken Dream until later. So it was The Heart of Thomas first. There was so much buzz around that coming out in 2013. 2012, 2013, I don't remember. But that, like, I was seeing on the manga bookshelf as well as, like, ANN. And when I went to the library one day, they happened to have it. Which is an incredible book for a library to have. Like, I think it's an excellent book for a library to have, but it's also unexpected because these are not cheap books.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so I got it and I read it. I think we went out on a camping trip, I remember. And, like, I read the first, like, third or so, which is quite slow-paced. And I was like, I'm not sure about this. But then, like, I got to, like, the halfway point and read the whole thing straight through to the end in, like, an afternoon and was just, like, sobbing. An absolute mess because that, especially the last third of that, is just going to put you through every emotion you've ever had in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
they're wringing you out like a rag for every emotion. It's not a subtle book.
It's also not necessarily a camping trip book. That was a...
No, but I, you know... I have reading tastes that coincide with Moto Hagio being my favorite mangaka, so... so, yeah, and after that, I was just really into her and would pick her up from the library when I saw... Like, I found A Drunken Dream there later on, and I read that. And then tried really hard to get... They were 11, and I was able to find the singles, as opposed to the four shoujo stories book, which is still very difficult to find, because it was published illegally. I got AA Prime eventually, and now, of course, we've also got Otherworld Barbara and the Poe Clan and Lilio. I've been following her releases ever since. And now I own a bunch of her Japanese catalog as well. So, what about you, G?
So, for me, I believe the way that I was introduced to Hagio's work was through that illegal publication of Four Shoujo Stories. I had picked it up because I had heard about it through whatever, various platforms, people chatting about it. It was a little bit of a, just kind of a interesting little bit of English manga publishing as well as Japanese manga publishing history. I obviously have an interest in kind of classic shoujo, and I hadn't read a lot of the year 24 artists at that point. I don't know if I'd read any. So somehow, through some miraculous lining up of the stars, I found a copy for actually not a horrendous price. So I did manage to get that. And I read through the four different stories that are there. I believe They Were 11 is the only Hagio story in that book. But it was just wonderful. It completely captured my attention. I believe Drunken Dream had been out, released by Fantagraphics by that point. And so I found a older copy, like a ex-library copy or something of that, and read it, loved it. That has some of her fantastic short stories, like Iguana Girl and Hunch and Half God. Really, really good stuff, and a whole range of stories from throughout her career. And I believe as well, either Heart of Thomas had just come out, which might have been why I had seen recent discussion about They Were 11, or it had been out, like it was upcoming. But again, I also, similar to you, Ray, well, I didn't get it from a library, but I purchased a copy and read it within a day or so. And it was just, you know, amazing. And I just continued to follow her work from there. And over the last couple of years, we've gotten, as you said, more and more of her works between Lil Leo and the Poe Clan, especially. And the upcoming new release of They Were 11 from Dempo, which is really, really exciting.
It doesn't just include the original story. The edition that they are publishing is also going to include the sequels, so we can look forward to that.
And I definitely am, and hopefully all you listeners should be too. But it's been really nice to see more and more of her work making the transition to, or making the jump to, English publishers. We've seen more classic shoujo just in general cross the pond, as it were. And yeah, I also, am I misremembering, but did Rachel Thorne mention reprints of Heart of Thomas? Because I think that might be happening, and it might be the proper version, not like the mistake version that they made.
I really hope so. Yeah, so the Heart of Thomas, I'm sure we'll get into the Heart of Thomas, like, as a work a little later on, but as a release from Fantagraphics, it is extremely just breathtakingly beautiful from the outside. The cover, the beautiful, like, high-quality, genuine hardcover that you can expect from them, that's not, like, the cheap chipboard covers that we get from other publishers. You know, the binding, like, sewn, the pages sewn into the binding, and, like, beautiful black inks, you know, really thick, lovely paper. However, The Heart of Thomas, actually, an early draft of the book was accidentally sent to publication, and there was only the one printing. Because, I mean, you know, the people who bought The Heart of Thomas is, like, me and G and, like, four of our listeners. So, and, like, three grannies in Japan, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, but yeah, so, like, it really makes me sad because, like, not only is there, like, typos, which is, like, normally not that big of a deal, but at the price point we're dealing with here, which is $39.99 now, I feel like it was higher before. Like, these are extremely high-end books, right? Yeah. You don't purchase these casually. So having it, like, just riddled with errors is quite annoying. There's issues with the cut of the pages where some of the pages just are cut off, some of the illustration, which, like, is unforgivable, frankly. Yeah. Especially for a creator like Hagio, who it's like every tiny, tiny little detail is going to have something in it, you know? And then the thing that annoys me the most is that there's multiple pages that have just straight up text missing from, like, speech bubbles. There's just empty speech bubbles where there should be something there. So, some of which is quite important, like narration. So it's a real shame. And I hope that, you know, if The Heart of Thomas is getting a reprint, as I know I've seen Rachel Thorne talk about, I know I've seen Fantagraphics talk about it, but I also know that the pandemic has gotten in the way of a lot.
Yeah.
But A Drunken Dream has been reprinted, so maybe that is still on, like, the plan is still to reprint The Heart of Thomas. We'll see. Poklan's getting a reprint as well to coincide with the second volume. But if it is getting reprinted, I really, really hope it's, you know, the real intended version.
Yeah. The correct and complete version, as it were.
Yes.
But all of that is to say that I think, well, as Ray mentioned, you have all of her titles that have been released. This is further to 365 Days of 801. Their next question was, what do you own of Hagio's work? I know Ray mentioned what she does. I have all of her works currently available in English. That does include four shoujo stories, although that will be finding a new home with Ray, because I'm buying. So I'm buying, I obviously have the Denpa edition on pre-order, and hopefully whatever else we see in the future will make its way to my library. I do not have the ability to read Japanese, so I'm a little bit out of luck and just have to rely on the English publishers. Like a rube.
Yeah, so the stuff that's available in English, just to put it in a nice pretty list, is obviously the Fantagraphics books, so A Drunken Dream and Other Stories, The Heart of Thomas, Otherworld Barbara, and the Poe Clan. Then we have Denpa's Little Leo, and upcoming They Were 11. And then older stuff would be, like, A Prime and They Were 11, which came out both in singles, which is four issues, and the Four Shoujo Stories book. And then we also have Parasite M has a short story from her in it as well. Other than that, I also own, in Japanese, The Heart of Thomas sequels, The Visitor and At the Lakeside. It's just a thin little book. They're not sequels. It's more like an epilogue. One of them's about Eric, and one of them's about Oscar. The Oscar one's a prequel. It's dealing with all of his familial mess. My son. I also own all of the Poe Clan sequels. I own the whole series in Japanese, plus the newer sequels. I own The Heart of Thomas in Japanese as well. I have her longest series to date, which is called Zankoku no Kamigashi Haisuru, which is A Savage God Reigns or A Cruel God Reigns. It's translated as. I have Marginal, which is one of her sci-fi series. I have Star Red, which is another sci-fi series. She does a lot of sci-fi. I have Mesh, which is sort of an interim work in between The Heart of Thomas and Savage God, which deals with similar themes. What else do I have? I have her, like, manga adaptation of Jean Cocteau's title that I can't pronounce. L'Enfant Terrible. I don't speak French. Osoru Beki Kodomo Tachi. I have her like adaptation of one of Mitsuse Ryu's novels. He's a famous sci-fi author and the writer behind Andromeda Stories, which Keiko Takemiya did a manga of. So both of them have worked with him before. And I own multiple like books that are about her work, like nonfiction. And like long form interviews with her. I think that's everything. I might be missing something, but I think that's everything. And my goal is everything she's ever made. So I still have a long way to go before then because she's very prolific, but
aim high, Ray. Yeah. Aim high.
You know what? You know what you need in life? You just need a goal. You need a goal that you can work for your whole life.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So all of that is to say that we have quite a few of Hagio's titles available in some capacity in English from various publishers with upcoming releases as well. But in saying that, she has a huge catalogue, especially of her sci-fi stuff that we have not gotten yet, and I would very much appreciate being licensed one day. Although, like, some of it's just never gonna happen, we know this, but, I mean, maybe. We live in hope, right?
What do you mean that her 17-volume super depressing manga about a teenager getting horrifically abused by his stepfather is not gonna get into English? What are you talking about?
Oh, no, yeah, that's a whole other can. We barely see what Hagio needed to do was have more boobs in the manga, and then it would be licensed, because it could have happened. Yeah. But anyway,
you know what she needs to do is she needs to make her BL sexier. It's all like depressing and shit. It's depressing and complicated. She needs to make it sexy.
Less abuse and more just steamy,
less
explicit.
Less, you know, metaphorically marrying a ghost by becoming a priest, you know? And, you know, the vampire boys in the Poe clan should kiss.
Absolutely. I think we all agree on that, right? I think just across the board.
Next question is similar. What was your collecting journey?
Mine was, as I said, it started with 4 shoujo stories, then jumped to A Drunken Dream and other stories, and then Heart of Thomas, and then subsequently, many years later, we Otherworld Barbara and Little Leo and the Poe Clan, and hopefully they were 11, and into the future.
Yeah,
I will say that when I was buying some of those earlier releases for Shoujo Stories and A Drunken Dream, well, four Shoujo Stories had been out of print forever because, again, it was illegal and not allowed. But so that was one that I think a lot of people had given up on ever picking up, aside from maybe picking up, like Ray mentioned, the floppies, like the single comics, to get that story. And A Drunken Dream, I think, was also like, either just out of print or like on the cusp of it. There, the prices for that were really fluctuating. So it was a bit of a struggle finding copies for those for like reasonable prices, which is always a bit of a gamble for Fantagraphic books anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think I just had a little, for me, I had a little bit of, I bought ex-library copies for A Drunken Dream because I wasn't super fussed mm-hmm. about condition necessarily. Like, it wasn't super beat up, but I know that a lot of collectors are very particular about having new books or like new books. So I think that helped me with my collecting journey for Hagio. I also was pretty familiar with Fantagraphics and where to find their books because I was going through the pain and suffering of collecting Wandering Sun, which is this whole other thing. So, you know, I was kind of right place, right time, I think, for some of those titles.
Yeah. I mean, same. Like, all of my Fantagraphics books are from when they were in print, mm-hmm. since I got into Hagio pretty early. And then, like, the floppies that I got go through, like, phases of being super easy to find and mm-hmm. impossible to find, so mm-hmm. I just happened to be looking at a good day, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever they pop up, they're usually not expensive. It's just, like, you have to wait for them to pop up. That's all. Yeah. AA Prime, I just got lucky on mm-hmm. eBay or something, I think. And the Japanese books, a lot of her stuff, like, it's constantly getting new editions and everything, especially a few years back was the 50th anniversary of her career, so a bunch of her stuff got new shiny reprints. The Poe Clan's like 40th anniversary or something was also mm-hmm. however many years ago, so the Poe Clan got a whole just absolute fuck ton of stuff. Oh, I forgot to say I have the Poe Clan coloring book. That's one thing I have. There's a video on my channel from forever ago mm-hmm. showing off that. So most of that is, like, newer editions, but I do prefer to get vintage books when I uh-huh. can, especially for The Heart of Thomas and the Poe Clan, which are particularly special and meaningful to me, and which, like, have English releases based on the Japanese collector's editions.
Mm-hmm.
I did, like, do a lot of, like, scouring on Mercari to find copies from the 70s
mm-hmm.
That weren't in the worst condition ever. They're not in that good of condition, especially the spines are extremely faded from being in the sunlight for years.
Yeah, yeah.
But the insides are fine, smell a bit like they've been in some grandma's attic for years, which was what I was looking for, so. Yeah, other than that, I'm not too picky, so I just kind of pick them up as I find them in editions that I like. I don't like the pocket editions. I can't read them very well, because
mm-hmm.
I'm old. By which I mean I'm 27, but I feel old. So,
time keeps ticking onwards, Ray.
Time makes a bitch of us all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, and also her art is beautiful, so I'd rather see it a little bit bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just have been, yep, when there's something that I really want, and I find it, I pick it up.
Mm-hmm. I also want to mention one of the newer releases from Fantagraphics, because we finally have, like, a release date for the second volume of the Poe Clan.
Yes.
They are reprinting the first volume, so don't pay scalper prices.
No excuse.
No, well, one, buy it, but two, don't pay scalper prices. They're already expensive books. Just get it from your local, like, comic store, or if you have to give money to Bezos, that, you know, I will forgive you this one time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so jump on it whilst it's still available, especially because we didn't even mention this, Hagio just was inducted into the Eisner Hall of Fame, right?
Yes. We should. I was about to mention this, and I forgot to. Yeah.
Which is amazing.
When I was saying that she belongs on the same list with Osamu Tezuka, she is. She is in the Eisner Hall of Fame. And the first, she's only the second Japanese female creator, Japanese woman creator, after Rumiko Takahashi, and she is the first creator to be primarily known for her achievements in shoujo and josei manga. So that's pretty huge.
It's very exciting news, and it was a little bit serendipitous considering we knew that we were going to do this episode,
yep.
And it just kind of happened right when we were like, oh my god! Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. The fact that it took them this long to get her on that list shows you how little the Eisner Hall of Fame actually means, but
yeah,
or how like little you should weigh their opinions, to be honest, particularly when it comes to manga. But it is nice to have her recognized.
We know that award ceremonies and that are trash. They're just popularity votes, but it is nice to know that, you know, at least some awareness, some variety has been brought back. All we need now is another manga to be, like, recognized that isn't fucking Junji Ito, because, like, I don't have an issue with the man, but, like, not every one of his books deserves winning awards, right? Like, anyway, that's the whole... We're going to talk about that in a couple months. Yeah. Anyway, so,
yep.
let's continue on.
Okay. Should we go on to our unofficial moderator, who we always appreciate giving us such wonderful lists of questions?
Absolutely.
At Storied Shelves, Stories on Shelves, starting off with a very key question, I think. What are your favorite Moto Hagio works? What are your favorites, G?
So,
or your favorite favorites?
I will, whichever. Again, put the asterisk that obviously I have only read her stuff that is available in English. And as much, like, I love all of her stuff. I will say that there's something very, like, deep in my heart, fondness, love for They Were 11. It was the first of her works that I read, but I also think, considering the length of it, it just, like, is so good at what it does. Like, it doesn't need a huge storyline. Like, it wraps itself up very, very neatly within the length that it is. I look forward to reading the sequel. Similarly, like, Heart of Thomas was just such a revelation. I adore that book. It has every sort of emotion going through it, and it's very much a challenge. And I think in really draws readers to confront the situation and the issues in that book. You know, it doesn't shy away from anything, and none of her series do. I love the Poe Clan. That's just so fabulously done. I love kind of the episodic nature of it. You get such snapshots into these characters' lives throughout the eras, and sort of seeing these cycles continue to turn. It's fantastic. I also want to mention, in regards to her short stories, and I've talked about them already, but within the A Drunken Dream collection, I love both Iguana Girl and Hanshin Half God, but I think Hanshin Half God is just so powerful that I... Mm-hmm. But both of them I recommend to everyone, but if you had a knife to my throat and I had to choose one, it would be Hanshin Half God. And it's just absolutely fantastic at looking at, again, relationships between people and family and Iguana Girl's relationship between mother, daughter, Hanshin Half God is also a relationship between, like, parents and child, but also, like, siblings. It's so good.
As well as, like, women with themselves.
Yes.
A lot about gender in that one, too. It's only, like, 15 pages long, but it packs such a bunch.
Exactly. And I think that's a testament to her work. Like, her longer stuff is fantastic. Obviously, it gives a lot of time for her to explore so many different things. But even her shorter works, wherein it's only, just over a dozen pages, there's still so much value and such a powerful story that can be told in so few pages that it's, yeah. Go read it. Go read it, everybody. It's good.
Yeah. I mean, for my favorite, again, it's like choosing a favorite child, but... it is The Heart of Thomas for me. Overall, I always say that just because, like, I read it so early. It was my first Motohagio. It had such a deep impact on me. Mm-hmm. It actually helped me, like, come to terms with my sexuality. Mm-hmm. So it has just a very deep personal meaning to me.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, I also wrote my undergraduate thesis on it. No, you can't read that, and you don't want to. but I did, you know, spend a semester close reading this book, so it means a lot to me. As well as, I wanted to mention the Poe Clan as well, because for me, like, that's, like, my biggest, like, comfort read, because there's not a whole lot in Hagio's catalog that could be described as comforting.
Mm-hmm.
The Heart of Thomas kind of is by the end. It, like, destroys you, tears out your heart, and fucking stomps all over it, but right at the end, it gives you a nice warm hug. The rest of her stuff does not have that warm hug at the end. but the Poe Clan is, like, you know, it's like listening to a spooky story, in, like, winter with, like, a roaring fire in the fireplace. It feels super comfy to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the inevitability of the characters, the way that they're just always there throughout time. There's something very comforting about that, even if they're not always in the best condition.
the constantness of them just perpetually existing, right?
Yeah, just hanging out, vibing, you know, doing whatever, trying to while away eternity.
Going to school, and you're like, why? Why would you do this to yourself?
You know, just stopping by some guy's house to, like, be painted for a few months while your boyfriend is, like, sleeping. Or, like, you know, showing up a few decades later when those paintings are discovered and you have to, you know, burn down the building that they're in.
Yeah. That might have been able to be handled better, but we don't judge. This is a non-judgment zone.
But, and I feel like, you know, Hagio herself feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I think she's returned to the characters again now that she's, you know, more or less in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And really the Poe clan is the only thing that she's drawing just sort of intermittently. She's like, here, I've got a chapter, have a chapter, wait a while, got a chapter, here you go.
Yeah, yeah. The consistency and the reassurance that, yeah, I can just pop back in and things haven't changed.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was very sweet because I was watching this NHK special, TV special, that was from, like, you know, that big anniversary the Poe clan had a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
2018. It ended, you know, with a promotion for the sequels because, of course, it did.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had, like, Hagio talking about it, and she was, you know, it was very sweet, because she was just like, you know, I just, like, it was like they were always there waiting for me, and I was just like, oh, hello, I'm glad to see you again, and it was very sweet how she was just talking about them, like, an old friend that had just come by to visit her again after so many years. These two immortal boys.
Mm-hmm. Just living their life, hanging out.
Yep. So the Poe clan means a lot to me as well. Mm-hmm. And then, a savage god reigns, I think, as well. Again, sort of in the same vein as you were talking about, Thomas, where it just, like, it really forces you to reckon with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many thoughts that I've had reading that series and rereading that series that nothing else has given me before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel similarly about Marginal, but I think Marginal is messier as a work. Yeah. Whereas Savage God is nearly perfect as a piece. I would call it a magnum opus for her. So I'm gonna give that one the edge over Marginal for favorite thing in my Japanese collection. That and, like, the Heart of Thomas epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love Oscar and I want to protect him with my life, so.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next question from Stories on Shelves is, what are some of your favorite moments solely for the art?
Man.
It's a tough ask.
Very. Oh, so many. So many good moments. I want to say that and this is, like, a little bit different from a lot of her beautiful spreads and the flow of her art in general, but one of her art like that really has imprinted itself on my brain, and I think about, and again, it's related to Hunch and Half God, is just, like, the image of the little girl completely decimated. Like, that is such a evocative kind of physicality to this relationship and this idea of self, and, you know, perception of self, and it's just a little bit harrowing. It's amazingly done and is a little bit counter to some of the more beautiful, emotional but beautiful full page spreads that we see in Heart of Thomas and some of her other works, and Poe clan and that. It always, like, immediately I remember that. I'm like, man, that don't fuck me up, I guess.
Yeah, we love a good Moto Hagio spread that just, like, viscerally fucks you up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, again, is a little bit different. But something, again, from A Drunken Dream is the last story in that, which is The Willow Tree, that has, I think, almost no dialogue. Maybe the last page has some dialogue, but it's completely told through the artwork, and you can just feel the emotion of this ongoing story, and it's just really well done. It's very simple, very simple in so far, like, there's not necessarily a lot going on in the panels, but it's so clear to what the emotions are being portrayed, and it does kind of prove that you don't need to have, like, 4 million things going on at once. You don't even have to say
she
anything.
She does it by choice, damn it.
Exactly. But it also means, like, it just proves you don't even need dialogue to tell a wonderful story, right? So that I always remember, too.
Yeah. For me, like, I mean, there's so many, but off the top of my head, another one that's more of the sort of, like, a lot of my favorite spreads in A Savage God Reigns are of the more harrowing variety. I have a thread that I made on Twitter as I'm rereading the series. I only made it to volume 7 or so, so I've still got more to do, but you gotta pace yourself with that series. But just a thread of, like, beautiful spreads from it, because there's so many. But the one that I've mentioned before, that I also sent G this time around because I knew I'd mentioned it on the podcast, is we've got, you know, our main character who is being sexually abused by his stepfather, and is sort of trying to keep it from everyone else in the house. And, you know, we see, like, this effect that, like, this, not just the horrific things that are happening to him, that are being done to him, but also just the building up, like, stress and trauma from just having to keep this from anyone, keep it all locked inside. He's just filled to the brim. He's just can't hold it anymore at all, and he can feel it, everything just leaking out from everywhere. He doesn't know when someone's gonna find out. We have sort of the device of him reading Edgar Allan Poe in English class, which I feel like is something Hagio does a lot, is, like, if she wants to include a direct reference to some sort of literary person, she'll just have the character happen to be learning about it in English class, and then they'll be thinking about it at home later.
Yeah.
Which feels like an insight into her mind. But always read the chalkboards in her series. She'll put poetry and stuff on there. So he's thinking about this Edgar Allan Poe story, the cat, the black cat. And as he's sort of wandering down to the basement, like, his own skeleton falls out of the wall next to him and dissolves.
Yeah.
And it's just the most metal thing. But it's such a great, like, visual representation of, like, what he's going through, because obviously the man in the story had murdered his wife and stuffed her in the walls.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the fact that he would, within his own mind, equate what's going on with him, like, that he's being victimized, like, that he feels so much that he's, like, a perpetrator in this regard, that he's done something wrong, that he would relate himself to a murderer who gets his just desserts in the end, is
It sure is something.
And then the other one that I really like on the lighter side of things, I really love a lot of the art in the Poe clan, particularly the stories that are from the 70s, especially the ones that are included in this first volume from Fantagraphics. There's so much, like, of that just classic, like, gothic atmosphere with, like, the pelting rain and the very stark blacks and whites. It's really great.
Very evocative.
The one... Yes, it's wonderful. And the spread that, like, I love the most, in part because it's just as memorable in the musical, but is, like, when Alan is sort of at his lowest point with his family issues, and Edgar comes to sweep him away, you know? opens the window and the curtains are flying and his cape is flying, and it's just a very beautiful composition, so, and super gothic, so we love to see it.
It's just like peak vampire romance, that idea of like the vampire showing up in the middle of the night and taking you away, and you're just like, oh yes, and like, man,
come with me. It's what is it? It's too much to bear alone. I'll, like, laugh at how cheesy it is and then just, like, sob into my pillow for the rest of the night. It's fine. yeah, so on to the next question, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So also from Stories on Shelves, we've got... quite a few questions from them this time around, so we always appreciate that. Could you discuss the ways Moto Hagio has and continues to influence creators? We have talked about that, but they also add, who are some creators who have been influenced by her work? The ones that I, like, know concretely are that, like, Yuki Kamitani has said that Hagio was one of the biggest early influences on their work.
Yeah, which totally makes sense when you've read Kamitani's work.
And then also Ikuhara, the anime director, lists The Heart of Thomas as one of the major inspirations for Utena. Specifically, he talks a lot about, like, flower motifs and rose motifs in The Heart of Thomas, and how that influenced his usage of rose motifs within Utena. But, yeah, I don't know if you know any others off the top of your head who have specifically, like, mentioned in interviews.
Yeah, I don't know, especially because I'm not that well-read regarding Japanese interviews. Obviously, because I didn't read them.
yeah, I only read interviews with Takanosuka actresses and Hagio herself, so.
I will say that, like, a lot of genre stuff is very, like, there's a lot of stuff established by Hagio in both the sci-fi and, like, BL, just shoujo in general, like, and manga in general.
In general, but also, like, Astro Lost in Space, literally being they were 11, but longer. That's
what I was gonna say, is, like, if you haven't read They Were 11, but you have read or watched Astro Lost in Space, they're pretty much the same.
I would say, like, They Were 11 has such wide-reaching influence that it's kind of, like, even if you haven't read They Were 11, I promise you have read They Were 11.
Yeah, exactly. Any kind of, like, oh, we have a stranger amongst the group, that's, like, that's the thing, right? Yeah, especially if it's in space. and there's quite a few of those, but...
Yeah, and I mean, literally any BL.
Any BL.
We've been talking about the Heart of Thomas and the Poe clan, and we haven't even talked about, like, the biggest thing about them, which is that they are some of the first BL manga ever.
They are gay AF. Oh.
Yes, especially the Heart of Thomas. That one's got boys kissing. Poe clan only has boys almost kissing. Like, they're kissing off screen. I mean, yeah. Come on now.
We know that they're kissing. We just don't have to see it because it's just so obvious that they're kissing, right?
Yeah. They've been together for hundreds of years. Yeah, my favorite part of the Poe clan is when both of them are using Mary Bell as their own beard at the same time. Even though Edgar is literally her brother. Like, literally nobody is, like, believing any of this.
No one is convinced. And yet they attempt.
They attempt. I mean, they are 14.
Forever 14. And
yeah, in so, 1879 or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so along with some of the BL works of Keiko Takemiya, these are, especially The Heart of Thomas, considered one of the first BL works, so if you have ever read a BL, you have read something that is inherently heavily influenced by Moto Hagio, so congratulations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, if you've read anything that's set in, like, a European boarding school.
Yeah.
then, like, the Thomas influence is, like, on the sleeve of that work.
Yeah. I don't want to say exotification of European boarding schools, but that's what it is, right? Like, this love of, like, of the boarding students in some alpine country. That's what it, like, it all comes back to Heart of Thomas.
Yes. And the poem of The Wind in the Trees, which is by Takemiya. But this is not a Takemiya episode. Also, like, all of this comes from, like, Yuri manga even earlier, like, Class S stories.
Yeah.
But the sort of brooding dark haired character and angelic blonde character. Which still exists. We see some playing around with, like, who's on the top and who's on the bottom, but in The Heart of Thomas, they all love Jesus, and nobody's on the top, and nobody's on the bottom. So.
Jesus is on the top, right? Jesus!
They're all leaving room for Jesus, okay? Now, if you want the slutty one, you read Takemiya's work.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's that as well.
Regardless, Hagio is one of those creators that is so prolific as well that, like, it would be impossible if there wasn't some influence in future works and in the industry in general. It's kind of like how, even if you've never read Night on the Galactic Railroad, you for sure have, like, experienced that story through anime and manga. Mm-hmm. 400 times. Like, there's you know it even if you haven't sat down and read the short story.
Yeah. That was it. I was gonna say Land of the Lustrous is very obviously influenced by Year 24 artists. Yeah, that one feels uncontroversial.
Yeah.
If you like Land of the Lustrous, you'll probably like Hagio also. Especially if you like the mess in Land of the Lustrous.
Oh my god, so much mess. and it's ending soon, and I don't know how that mess is going to wrap up, but we'll
not
see.
Well.
Not well, no. we're not getting a warm hug after Lustrous is done, right?
And then I guess I would mention also just, like, paneling layouts are, like, Ahagio and other Year 24 artists really, really revolutionized how the comic panel is used within shoujo manga.
Yeah.
Specifically the way that Ahagio often just completely does away with them, in order to, and uses her paneling layouts specifically to really get into the head spaces of her characters.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what shonen manga of the time was doing, which shonen manga typically still sticks very much to squares showing, like, chronological sequences of action.
Yeah.
But if you see, like, more creative, like, paneling flourishes within shonen manga, that can also be traced back to the Year 24 group and to Hagio. But especially
Haikyuu,
in shoujo manga.
Haikyuu,
yeah,
is
Haikyuu.
Therefore the yeah. spiritual successor to
a lot of the
yeah.
volleyball manga of the 70s, but also, yes, Year 24.
Mm.
But yeah. And then this is kind of an interesting one. Are there any elements in her work that modern works don't really touch upon or explore? I feel like this is a harder thing to put into words. It's just, like, to me, she's such an individual creator. Like,
yeah.
There's ways that she explains the world that are just, you're not going to get from anyone else,
mm-hmm.
because she's just so herself in mm-hmm. all of her work. I don't mm-hmm. know how to put it other than that.
I also want to say that, like, especially in regards to, like, abuse and familial abuse, not to mm-hmm. say that, like, abuse is never covered in manga, because it is. It for sure is. But, like, I don't,
mm-hmm.
especially in, like, the shoujo or josei demographics, you wouldn't necessarily see the big names of this era talking about, like,
mm-hmm.
oh, or having a manga about, like, oh, a main character who's being, like, molested by a step-parent, or and then murder mm-hmm. happens. Like, there's certainly dark elements. Like, that's also not to say, like, it never comes up, but it's a little bit taboo for, like, mainstream, and I don't think that's, again, some of the bigger names that are, like, we see as having really big hits currently would get that complicated in some of their series, because
mm-hmm.
manga is, I want to say manga's a bit more commodified now versus when it was, there was a little bit more leniency for, like, artistic expression and, you know, creating, quote-unquote, a work of art. And not to say that, like, manga hasn't always been a consumed product, but I think there's less freedom because of the way that manga is structured and marketed now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, on the one hand, there is actually, I would say, much more
mm-hmm.
room for experimentation within, like, indie
yeah.
magazines and indie publishers and the internet. Like, you can just post mm-hmm. a comic online. But I think with the Year 24 group in particular, there was this very specific push that can be traced back to sort of honorary Year 24 member,
mm-hmm.
The editor Junya Yamamoto, at Shoujo Comic was like very specifically like, I want to be the one to like, you know, cultivate these artists who mm-hmm. are seeing what shoujo manga can be as art. Mm-hmm. Like, he was very much, and those artists were very much like, that's what they were aiming for. It was like, what can shoujo manga be? Whereas, like, if you look outside of the Year 24 group, even to, you know, someone like Ikeda, who is often mm-hmm. included in the Year 24 label, but just, like, she wasn't in the same, like, friend circle, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you can see, like, her talking about, you know, I mean, the reason that she switched main characters from Marie Antoinette to Oscar was because, audiences wanting to see more Oscar, yeah, which audiences of the 70s were correct. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But so it's like, you know, it's approaching it from a whole different thing, and I feel like it's like all of these circumstance, like coincidental circumstances coming together and meeting for like a happy accident that mm-hmm. accidentally revolutionize all of shoujo manga. So I think, yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's an interesting little blip.
Very much so. And I think that's kind of like how it's interesting in how serendipitous a lot of this stuff is.
That's a good word. Yeah.
And so it's not to say that, like, this can never happen again. Obviously, again, timing and luck and all of these things kind of all have to coincide, which is a very difficult thing to do. But it does mean that's why we're talking about it now, right? That's why it had such an impact. And I think a better way to verbalize what I was saying before is that the industry, or in particular this editor, was willing to take the risk or to push things that were a little bit against mm-hmm. the grain. And in modern day current publishing, like the publishing industry, is not that mm-hmm. willing to push different,
yeah.
like unknowns, the small press and the indie scene and self-published works, absolutely. But it, you have to also, like, if you're doing that, you have to then like show popularity, right? Because obviously we've mm-hmm. seen a lot of like Twitter comics and things make the jump to traditional publishing, mm-hmm. but that's because it yeah. found its audience. And
mm-hmm.
so nowadays you have to have like those real numbers of like, yes, this will be successful, or there is an audience for this. Whereas with a lot of the Year 24 group, it's like, oh, hey, we're going to take this risk and see what happens.
You can read in the essay at the end of The Heart of Thomas, you can see that like Yamamoto's like MO was like, he would just accept their work and be like, yep, we're publishing this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whether he was sure of it or not, he was like, mm-hmm. yep, thank you, we'll publish this. So and some of it found an audience and some of it didn't, like mm-hmm. That whole essay is about how like The Heart of Thomas really didn't find its audience until after the Poe Clan did. And yeah. did like buku numbers with its graphic novel tankobon mm-hmm. editions,
mm-hmm.
And then The Heart of Thomas was allowed to be finished and was also released as tankobons, and then it found its audience.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, you know, it's cool. It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And elements of her, oh yeah, I wanted to mention as well, like, that her science fiction,
mm-hmm.
With the exception of maybe They Were 11, which I think can be enjoyed by just about anyone, mm-hmm. But certainly Otherworld Barbara falls into this category where it's like her sci-fi is very hard sci-fi. She's and it's very literary. She's incredibly well read in terms of literary science fiction. Like, she's not all that interested in, like, you know, like giant robots and like cute little spaceships. She's here to talk about, like, cloning. And, like, Marginal is in large part about the womb as a philosophical concept. Like, she's, yeah, she's interested in, like, the ethical ramifications of time travel. She's, like, she's,
yeah, it reminds her sci-fi reminds me a lot of if we're talking about literary science fiction authors, Ursula K. Le Guin's, like, The Heinous Cycle and stuff like that, wherein she
I think she's a fan as well, like, she's mentioned her before.
Which would make sense because Le Guin was writing about these concepts of society and humanity and our relationship with the environment and kind of the interconnected relationships between groups and challenging gender and challenging, you know, gender-specific roles and things like this in a time where sci-fi was like, okay, we get in the spaceship and fire the laser beams, right? So,
She's a... Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Everyone go read Le Guin's here to get sci-fi. Go read Le Guin's sci-fi if you haven't. Heinous Cycle is great.
And yeah, God, I love Hagio's sci-fi so much. She's so, like she is really concerned with, like, these things that she reads in, like, scientific articles and stuff, and she wants to, like, you know, work those through as a concept, like, what could we be capable of and what does it mean? But at the same time, she's also, like, weaving those sci-fi concepts in as, like, complex layered metaphors for, like, the psyches of her characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you really can't separate one from the other. She's always thinking about both of those aspects, the individual and the societal, the micro and the macro. And I just, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
It really, anyway, read Otherworld Barbara.
Yeah. Read Otherworld Barbara. If you have to read one, if you can only have time for one Le Guin sci-fi, read The Left Hand of Darkness and thank me later.
There you go. Which works of, this is the next question. It's the last one from Stories on Shelves. Which works of hers haven't you read yet? I think we've both read everything available in English.
I'm just the, again, poor Rube who has to wait for everything in English. So there's a bunch of her stuff that I wish I could read in some capacity. And there might be scans and stuff online, but you know my stance on that. And so I patiently wait.
And I just torture G by telling her about what she's missing. So
I mean, at least you're aware that it's 'cause
I can't keep it in.
At least you're aware that it's torture, right?
But I do it anyway. I have a couple things I still haven't read in my collection. I just started Mesh, and I haven't finished it yet. That's the most recent edition. And then I haven't read the Mitsu Seidu adaptation, and I haven't read the Jean Cocteau adaptation. So, there's a couple of nonfiction books I haven't read yet either. But I want to get those read, and then buy more Hagio books, so. Next, we are going to at Paulina Lua, who asks, who is your favorite character from Hagio's work and why? Mine is Oscar.
Well, yeah, Oscar.
Oscar from The Heart of Thomas. Oh, and like everyone in the Poe clan, Edgar and Alan, both of them.
Yeah. I knew you'd say Oscar because obviously.
Yeah.
You know, the Vampanella.
My little bean.
Very, very strong contenders. I like, what is their name? Frau? Is that their name? From They Were 11?
Which one? Froll?
Froll, thank you. Why did I say Frau?
Yeah, Froll's cool.
Yeah. They're good. Don't know. I don't know. Don't ask me.
Yep.
That's.
I like Jeremy and Ian from Savage God Reigns a lot. I like the dad from Otherworld Barbara. I always forget his name, but I like him a lot. I like the son too. Oh, I like, what's his name? The guy from, X plus Y.
Oh! Yeah.
That kid. I like him a lot, too. but my dearest son boy is, Oscar from The Heart of Thomas. He's been waiting all of this time, and I just, like... He's so sweet.
He's going through it.
He's, yeah, you know, his, like, his, I like, yeah, he's been going through it. I feel like I should leave what exactly he's been going through to y'all to discover by reading the book. But he's got a lot of issues.
To put it mildly.
His family is a little bit dysfunctional. but he is a good, wonderful boy. And he loves Yuli very, very, very much. And he makes me cry all the time. Yeah. Next, from Bizarre Individual, question is, what's in print and where to get it? I've always been interested but overwhelmed, so picked up nothing. Also would love to hear how the move went. It went good. I'm in America now, and, I found a job, so we're all settled.
Yay!
Everything's good. but back to the Hagio question. What's in print and where to get it for people who are sort of overwhelmed and intimidated because, it's, like, weird small publishers who are picking up her stuff and, like, weird expensive editions and they're constantly in and out of print, so.
Yeah.
right now, I just checked A Drunken Dream and Other Stories is in print from its reprint, so you can pick up that. I think... If you're gonna pick up one thing, that is a great place to start because it does have stories covering the beginning of her career up until the early 2000s. And it really runs the gamut. There's sci-fi short stories, there's more realistic short stories, more experimental short stories, as well as Iguana Girl and Hanshin Half God, which are considered two of her greatest works. So, and I think that book's only $30 or something.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, compared to the other ones.
yeah. And it's also, like, because it's in print, you should be able to find it most places you buy books. If you're really wanting, like, to ensure you have a copy, then you can buy it directly from Fantagraphics. But I would say that, you know, again, your local comic store can probably order it in for you. If you want to give money to Bezos or Barnes & Noble or whatever else is, like, your large chain, then that's also, you know, an option.
An option.
Yeah.
Yep. And then also, The Pope Land Volume 1 will be reprinted very soon, and Volume 2 will be out. Which will complete the series, at least the original series from back in the 70s. I think Rachel Thorne has continued to insist that we will be getting the sequels as well, so that'll be a third book. But you will have, like, the complete, what existed of the Poe clan for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
In those two books. So, that one... Yeah, if you want a good vampire story, a good gay vampire story, definitely pick that one up, I would say. But, I mean, that's going to run you $80 for the two, so, if you buy them new.
Yes, indeed.
And then They Were 11 will be out at some point. I don't believe in Denpa's release dates, so.
Yeah. I also, you should be able to, considering Denpa's release dates, you should be able to pick up Little Leo fairly easily. It's still in print, and again, you can probably get at any of your local place that you buy comics regularly.
And I'm sure you can get Parasite M still. I don't know. I guess I haven't checked, but it's, I don't know, it's Kodansha, so probably...
Probably.
Question mark?
They keep that. And it's, considering it's a Parasite title, I feel like it's in print, right?
Yeah. There's not a whole lot else in that book that's worth reading. But no. The Hagio story is worth reading.
Comparatively, definitely get Parasite F. That one's a good one. Parasite M is... literally just for that first story from Hagio, and
it, literally
and disregard the rest. Disregard the rest, it's all trash.
Yeah, but still get it though for the Hagio story. Still get it though.
Because it really is like the best thing. Like, it out of both of those anthologies, it's the best thing by like a wide margin. And that's saying a lot, because I do like, there's a lot of really strong ones in Parasite F, including Asamiku Nakamura. But yeah, that one should be read.
But to sum up, if you have interest in the Poe clan, I would get those two books. But my recommendation, if you want to start getting into Moto Hagio and you want a book that's in print now, go with A Drunken Dream and Other Stories.
Yes.
Okay, we're getting into our last two question askers. We did get a lot this time.
So many.
A friend of the show at Rin Reads Manga asks, this is the same question. Do you have any titles you recommend for anyone just starting to get into her works? Again, that anthology of short stories is, I think, the best place to start.
Yeah.
And then if you love that, you know, you can... Sorry, if you love that, I would move into The Heart of Thomas or The Poe Clan.
Yeah.
I would
give the edge to Poe Clan just because it is in print.
In print.
The Heart of Thomas is a little bit up in the air. Again... promises have been made. We don't know when those will eventually
be kept. Yep. And she says, I know classic shoujo can be pretty intimidating. It can be, but it shouldn't be. Hagio is wonderful. You can enjoy her just as much as you would enjoy any other creator who's working now. I mean, she's still working now. Let's see. At Marumichi is our last question asker and has a handful. Hagio's works are slowly being available in English, so which one of her non-licensed manga would you like to see getting licensed in English next? I'm interested in your answer, G. What do you
being realistic, and also again not being like, I don't know the entirety of her body of work because there's just so much, but being realistic, knowing how publishing works and how English audiences for manga work, I would say that Star Red would be like my choice, because one, it's like only 5 volumes long, it's shorter, it's one of her more like hard-boiled sci-fi, but it's it just has more of a chance than anything else, I think.
Yeah, it's got like a cool spunky heroine as well.
Yeah, so.
And that 70s style of hers that I think is most recognizable to people. If I was being realistic, I think I agree with you that Star Red is probably the one that has the best chance. That and the Pokeland sequels, which we've been promised, so hopefully we'll get. Maybe, like, Nanohana, which is, like, a collection of short stories that she did in response to the 2011 Fukushima disaster. I could see that one happening. But if I'm not being realistic, I would really like... I really want Marginal, specifically because my partner really wants to read it, so it would be nice if it was in a language they could read it in. And then, of course, I want my beloved, A Savage God Reigns. So, it's on the list with A Poem of the Wind and the Trees, that, of manga that is, like, an absolutely not, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, yeah.
But, also, I really, 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 really want it, so.
Someday. When we take over the English manga publishing community, right, because it's inevitable, right, we will start a revolution, and when we do, that will be the top of our list, right?
Yeah. this one's related, so we'll do this one first. Do you think that Zangoku no Kamigashi Haisuru, or A Cruel God Reigns, will ever get licensed in English, or is it doomed to remain unlicensed the same way as Kazutoki no Uta due to the heavy content? That one, the second one. There. Yeah. For a lot of reasons, as someone who's read all of it, a whole lot of reasons, because, it's not just the abuse, it is also after the murder of the abuser. We also have the incredibly fraught and toxic relationship between Jeremy and his stepbrother, the son of his abuser, and they are drawn to each other like a moth to the flame, but they're not good for each other.
Say it ain't so, Ray. You don't think it's the match made in heaven? You don't think it's, you know?
I think that after they both get several years of intensive therapy, they might be the only options for each other. I think the two of them are inevitable, but, yeah, they're, yep, I love them both dearly, but they're a mess, and I feel like they're messy in a way that, like, modern readers are not gonna respond to.
Yeah, yeah.
that's a level of nuance that, we can't really ask from a lot of people these days.
You mean it's not clear-cut black and white morality, and if you read a bad thing, that means you also condone a bad thing, right?
Yeah. It's, or like, you know, because Jeremy's not a perfect little victim, you know, who's like totally unproblematic, you know, after everything that he's been through. Mm. No, he's a fucking mess.
Yeah.
He's a mess, and he does messy things.
Right.
He doesn't even have, like, a grip on reality.
Right. I just think that if you read a book that contains murder, you just want to be a mm-hmm. murderer, obviously. Right? Like, that makes yeah. sense.
Yeah. Well, there is murder. In that book. Anyway, yeah, I don't think it's ever going to be licensed. Not even, it's not the heavy content. It is the heavy content, but it's the fact that there's 17 volumes of the heavy content. Yeah. And that is the same as Kazeto Kinoza, which is also 17 volumes. So.
Yeah.
Nope.
No. Not happening.
Like, if it was shorter, like, we're getting all kinds of weird stuff. Like, we got New York, New York. Like, what?
Yeah, we're going to talk about problematic. It is easing up a little bit, but...
It's, you know, it's from the 90s, and it's by Street Chick, so...
Yep.
It's New York, New York is such a weird one. But, I love that one, too. Mm-hmm. And its mess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the last question here. I think it's the last question, if I'm not mistaken, is one that I think is good to end on because it kind of sums everything up.
Mm.
What makes Hagio one of your all-time favorite mangaka? Yeah. What makes Hagio one of your all-time favorite mangaka? What are the things you like about her works and her as a mangaka? So,
I mean, we spent the last, how long has it been? Hour, 45 minutes, talking about all the different reasons. But I think Hagio, aside from being just, like, a huge name, very influential and historically relevant when talking about, like, manga and comics history... her stories are really timeless in a way that
mm-hmm.
because of her, how much of herself goes into her works, there's just this genuine feeling that makes them, in a sense, like the themes, the feelings, the emotions, the characters, and your empathy for the characters, so, like, it doesn't age, it doesn't feel like an old series, quote-unquote, if that makes sense. Like, there's a very mm-hmm. timeless quality to so many of her works. Again, she's mm-hmm. not afraid to, like, get really uncomfortable in her series. She's not afraid to confront so many things that I think other artists, creators, writers, whatever, would try to avoid or skirt around or explore, but not as in depth, not with the levity, and the, I don't want to say like ferociousness, but like there's so much, there's an energy behind how these stories mm-hmm. are told that mm-hmm. can mean that they do stick with you a really long time. Again, there's a reason why we're talking about her works, aside from her just being fantastic and also having written comics for majority of the last several decades, her prolificness. There's a reason her works have become so classic and are still recognized as being kind of core to this, the Year 24 group and this shoujo manga movement and manga in general. And when you read her works, you know that it's like, you know that she's the creator, right? Like, she is absolutely, nobody can truly mimic her style. It is so quintessentially her stories to tell that if anyone tried to emulate that, and not in like a homage style, but like if somebody was just like, I am going to copy paste this storyline and do it exactly the same, gonna commit like terrible plagiarism, it wouldn't feel the same, because there's a truth to Hagia herself that becomes evident in every single one of her series. And sometimes that is very blatant in, like, with themes of, you know, mother-daughter relationships and the role of women in or society. Or just,
like, struggling intensely to write, like, mother characters who are not just the worst.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that is so quintessentially her, but then also stuff that's a little bit more... not necessarily obviously pulled from her life. Well, it is, but like, she doesn't write mothers kind, not unproblematic mothers well, because she has a very complicated relationship with her own mother. But similarly, like, that the role of girls in society or women in society, and this the idea of gender and how all of these things play a part of in society. It's like, obviously stuff that has affected Hagia throughout her life, and that she thinks about and ruminates on a lot, but you couldn't necessarily point directly to, like, oh, because of this specific thing in her upbringing or in whatever, right? So, and in saying that, like, a lot of these topics still very relevant. We should have crushed the patriarchy by now, but ladies, come on. We got work to do.
Yeah. I think something that I appreciate about, like, her talking about, those kinds of, like, gender issues or, you know, like, parent-child relationships or what have you, sibling relationships. Anything she's talking about, she's not an author who pretends to have answers.
Yeah.
She's just ever questioning, and I like that a lot about her. A lot of the angst and this inner turmoil that comes from her work, especially, like, I wanted to bring up, since we haven't brought it up that much throughout the episode, we did talk about her BL, but I want to talk more specifically about gender, because we see this trend with her where, in general, she trends towards male protagonists, and she will prefer to pair a male character with another male character rather than writing female characters as the point of view character. And she has a lot of quotes about this, as, like, she's sort of had, you know, this original answer that she had in the 70s and sort of has gone back and ruminated on that and, like, why did I feel that way? Where it's like, you know, she, from the very beginning, has felt like a roadblock when trying to write female characters or trying to write her own point of view through a female character's mouth. She feels like, you know, she says, like, when she tried to write The Heart of Thomas with all female characters, everything came out like mushy or something. I don't remember the word that she used, but or she said, like, you know, the short story, the Shotaro Ishinomori short story that she originally got the inspiration for the Poe clan from, was about a pair of vampire sisters. So she started out wanting to write about vampire girls, two vampire girls.
Mm-hmm.
But she felt like she couldn't say what she wanted to through the female character's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she changed that character to a boy, suddenly everything she wanted to say came out so easily. And it sounded cool. And it sounded pressing.
Yeah.
And important. And that's something that, like, has continued to be more comfortable for her, like, over the decades. You'll see mm-hmm. her return to male protagonists over female protagonists. We also see her looking back on that later in life, like, oh, that was internalized misogyny. Mm-hmm. That was, like, my own prejudices. That was the limitations of shoujo manga at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I don't know, that journey, like, that journey is so interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, like, even though she's come to realize, like, this is, my prejudices are, like, leading me to feel this writer's block when I'm writing female characters.
Yeah.
You know, she can't make that roadblock go away, so she still writes male characters. And I don't know. That's just, it's interesting. Like, seeing her sort of wrestle with these things within herself. As well as, like, I mean, I think she's got some deeper gender considerations going on, yeah. personally.
Yeah, yeah.
She is very fascinated by the concept of intersexuality. Mm-hmm. We see this in AEA Prime. We see it in They Were 11. We see it in Marginal as well, a lot of her sci-fi. As well as Mesh also, mm-hmm. which isn't sci-fi. She is sort of fascinated by, like, gender fluidity, by bodily, gendered body changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, like, one of the things that I was so, like, loved so much about Marginal is this whole discussion of, like, agency and cycles of abuse
mm-hmm.
through the context of, like, the specific, like, dilemma that comes up when you consider the womb
yeah.
and the fact that you've got this thing
mm-hmm.
inside you, just leeching off of you. Like, at one point, does your agency end and someone else's begin?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you reconcile this organ within you? And it is, like, it's so, like, visceral and so, like, sometimes grotesque, the mm-hmm. way that she, like, describes just having a womb, because the main character is, hermaphroditic in a more, like, sci-fi sense.
Yeah.
And does have, like, is the only person on the entire planet Earth, which is all male at this point, who can give birth.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, it's very interesting. But all of this is to say, like, the way that Hagio doesn't pretend to have the answers, she's just as confused as we are. She's found something interesting to explore, and she'll explore it from every angle she can think to.
Mm-hmm.
But she very rarely comes to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's just something so human about that. And there's something so, I don't know. As a reader, I like that I'm being asked to consider these things with her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that I'm being asked to come to my own conclusions, just mm-hmm. as she has to come to her own conclusions as well. I feel like that's unfortunately a rarity among, mm-hmm. especially, like, manga, which is, you know, so heavy on genre fiction, so heavy on stuff aimed at teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice. It's nice, and it's human.
Uh-huh.
And it's meaningful, so. Yeah. all of that to say that. But and I wanted to say that, like, it's a very common reading of her male characters, to specifically her boy characters, to read them as more like third gendered or agender. They're sort of just a sexless third party that she can put her mouth through. if that makes sense at all. But I think if you've read her work, it would make sense. maybe not otherwise, I don't know. But yeah. Anyway, I love Motohagio.
Yeah, me too. And I think they're like, there's a, we rattle on about her all of the time, even on the podcast, off the podcast, in our private social medias. You know, it's definitely your brand, Ray. She's kind of synonymous with anything that Ray does.
My brand.
Her brand.
Also, it is entirely the fault of Motohagio that I'm obsessed with Takarazuka as well. So, my entire brand.
Exactly. So, you know, it, regardless, we are of, like, very obviously biased, like always with this podcast. Hopefully you wouldn't be listening if you wanted just, like, a pure, objective, I don't know, takes on things, because from the get-go, we've made no secret of how much we love Hagio and her works, and how excited we are whenever there is a new title of hers licensed. I mean, that Lil Leo was, like, such a, it was like a sideswipe from, getting sideswiped in traffic. It was just out of nowhere. It really was, like, I don't think anyone was expecting that license, let's be honest. But regardless,
not just Motohagio, but her cat manga,
her weird cat, like, anthropomorphic kind of cat manga. But there's a lot to read. There's even if you're just sticking to English stuff, there is quite a few of her titles available. We have gotten lovely releases from both Fantagraphics Books and Dempa. Lil Leo is a really nice book. I don't think we mentioned that, but it is very high quality, like all of Dempa's releases, for the most part. So, money well spent there. I obviously can't speak to They Were 11 from Dempa yet, but I would expect, knowing the team at that company, that they, they're putting a lot of love and care into it. But hopefully this has inspired you all, if you haven't yet, to actually try some of her works. There's so much to enjoy, and, you know, it, well, maybe enjoy is also, like, a difficult word to use, because you will go through all of the emotions.
Every emotion. Every single one.
All of them, all of the time. And so, and they are challenging. Again, the, we've talked about it a lot. There are, these are heavy works. A lot of them deal with very serious topics. So obviously, like, look after yourself. Don't force yourself to, you know, read something that you truly are not in a place to read. But, again, there is some catharsis I find with some of her challenging works. So if that is something that may be relevant to you as well, I would still encourage you to maybe give it a try. But again, look after yourself first and foremost.
And if you want, like, a list of content warnings or something for any of these books, I'm sure you can DM either of us and we'd be willing to give you those. They can be extensive depending on the book. So.
Yes. Yeah. But if you are asking, like, for specifically Japanese titles, Ray is the person to go to, not me.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, careful there.
Me just, like, shrug emoji, I don't know. no, I wouldn't do that to you guys. But thank you everyone who did send in your questions. Hopefully we answered them to the best of our ability, and, you know, gave you a little bit of insight to both of our relationship to Hagio, and her works, and then a little more insight into specifically some of the stuff that is so prevalent in her works. Next month, we are doing something a little bit different. We don't have... I guess this is kind of a topic episode that we're doing next month. And we briefly touched on this in our... We talk about this sort of stuff a lot throughout the podcast, but we are deep diving... Well, I say that. I don't know how deep it'll be. We are going to be talking about our early otaku experiences, or our first series, as fans. So, a little less focus on the manga side, a little more focus on the people side. Sorry to disappoint, guys, but we'll be talking about, whatever questions you want to send in, but sort of how we got into being manga fans and how we got into this position that we're in now, where we talk for 2 hours about manga.
We each own like hundreds of manga books.
So many manga books you don't even want to know.
Yeah. Don't even bat an eye about paying $40 for the next Poclan. You know, how did we become these people that we are today?
$40 US, which is like a cool 65 Australian. Yeah, it hurts, man. And yet. So if you've ever had any questions pertaining to us, as individuals, as fans, as podcast hosts, obviously try not to make it creepy. We are, you know, but we trust you guys. So,
yeah,
just be cool. and we will hopefully get some entertaining, interesting stories out of the podcast. I think it's a solid way to kind of restart getting into it after our month break. And hopefully this was a return to form, if not better, because we do try our best. With that, I think that's everything. So thank you everyone for listening. If you are just discovering the podcast, you can follow us on my YouTube channel, which is Simply G. I post these episodes on there in a quote-unquote video version. It's just audio with the art, but it's, if you like YouTube as a platform, then we are there. You can also find us on pretty much every major podcasting platform, including Spotify and Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts, and I'm sure other ones, I don't know. Anchor FM is our main hosting point, but we are on wherever you like to listen to podcasts. You can also follow Ray on all of her social medias. She is at WhimsicalPix, that's P-I-X, all one word, on Twitter, where she posts a lot of Zuka girls, a lot of monkeys,
Moto Hagio.
Yes. So, you know, you really know what you're getting with that. Technically, you still have a YouTube channel. When was the last time you posted technically on there?
Don't ask me that question.
But if you are wanting to watch...
There's backlog there.
Yes, there's plenty of wonderful backlog. A lot, actually, pertaining to Moto Hagio. So you can find that on YouTube at whimsical pictures, or additionally, you can follow me on social media. I am Simply G, as mentioned, on YouTube. You can also find me on Twitter at G Reads, all one word. That's G-double-E, where I post basically just whatever, right? There's a little bit of consistency, but it's like manga stuff and then manga news and then maybe a meme that I found
anything
funny.
You would expect. Yeah. Anything that you would expect G to post is pretty much there. So.
Yeah. And it's also where I post the questions for, well, I posit that people send questions for the podcast. So if you have a burning question for next month, make sure to keep an eye out for that. It gets retweeted a couple times before we sit down. And so hopefully a lot of opportunity to ask away. Otherwise, that's it. Thanks everyone for sticking with us, and we'll see you in the next episode for September. Man, this year's gone quickly. Bye till then, everyone.
Bye, everybody.